Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
They are who we thought they were.
Oh, do we have a show for you today? I am Pod Vader, Jay Soderberg, leading the super fans today as we preview the AFC East during this NFL offseason. It is a wonderful Saturday here, May 23rd. I am joined by two of the other super fans here in the AFC East, and I say hello to Dolphin Dave. How's it going?
I'm good, Pod. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. We also have that guy who represents the Jets, Andrew. What's up?
That guy. That's some introduction.
I think that's going to be my thing with you this year, Andrew. I'm just going to introduce you as that guy.
I've been called worse things.
I'm sure you are. Our Patriots superfan, Patrick, is unable to join us because we believe he's having a baby. So congratulations, Patrick.
Congrats,
sort of
Pat.
Popped up. Congratulations.
I mean, I know he's known about it for a few months now, but it sort of popped up and surprised us a little bit. But congrats, Patrick. And our Bills superfan, we don't have one. If you want to be the Bills superfan, send us your application to nextfanup@gmail.com. You can also tweet at us at NFU Podcast or Facebook. Go to facebook.com/NFU Podcast or just search Next Fan Up on Facebook. It comes right up in the search. So we had to go to a special guest, gentlemen. And here he is now, the special guest that we promised right at the top of the show. He is the host of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. You can find him on Twitter at Ross Tucker NFL. If you don't know by now, I'm talking about Ross Tucker. Ross, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jay. Thanks for having me, man.
Dude, it's an honor for the first guest ever on Next Fan Up to be you. It had to be you. Of course it had to be you.
Well, I appreciate that, and I am honored, and I like the name of the podcast, and I would expect nothing less. After all you and I have been through over the years, I think the least I deserve is to be the first guest on this podcast.
Well, one of the reasons why we thought you were also the perfect guest for this particular show, as we're previewing the AFC East here in the offseason without a lot to talk about, we don't have a Buffalo Bills super fan. So if you are a Buffalo Bills fan and you want to join us on this podcast and you share the passion of football like most of us mostly educated fans are, you can send us an email with your application to nextfanup@gmail.com. But in the meantime, Ross, you get a pass because you actually played for this team. And I believe you said if you were to affiliate yourself with one team, it would be the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And by the way, Bills fans are awesome and they're everywhere. So I'm a little surprised that you don't have a Bills super fan yet, but I'm quite sure you'll get one soon because the Bills Mafia is the real deal. And I played for five teams in my 7 years, and my best experience really by far was my time in Buffalo from 03 to 2005. And I got the most playing time there, made the most money, had the most fun, all those type of things that go into your pro football experience. So, yes, I have a great affinity for the Buffalo Bills. And because it's been so long since they've made the playoffs, we got awfully, awfully close in 2004, but still weren't able to make it. I certainly root for them a little bit and hope that they're able to finally break through. So, yeah, if I had to say I'm a fan of a team or affiliation with some team, it'd be Buffalo. But now that I'm in the media and I'm an analyst and stuff, I'm critical of them at times as well, just like I am of everybody else. So sometimes Bills fans get frustrated and I don't say all positive about them, but my job is to say what I think.
Well, that's also why we love you, Ross, and why we have you here today, because the other guy who's in Buffalo right now, who likes to say a lot of what's on his mind, is their new head coach in Rex Ryan. Is he the guy, though, that's going to finally bring some championship gold to Buffalo?
I think he's got a pretty good shot. I really do. I think that there's, I think there's a great shot that the Bills are going to break through while Rex Ryan's there. And I don't know when that'll actually be, but you know, you got to look at it this way, right? I mean, I think your Patriots, Jay, are going to take a step back this year. I don't know how much of a step back. I think that the Bills were 9-7 last year. I don't think they'll be any worse than they were at the quarterback position. And in fact, I think with Rex Ryan being there, you'd like to think that they'll be better offensively and defensively. Plus, you bring in LeSean McCoy, you bring in Percy Harvin, and they have some legitimate weapons now. So they have as good a shot as they've had in a long time to get the double-digit wins and potentially break through.
The defense is really where Rex sows his oats, and obviously the Buffalo Bills defense is pretty good, and they souped themselves up in the draft this year as well. Talk about that Bills defense and what they can do.
Well, I always say that I really truly believe after quarterback, the second most important position group in the NFL is defensive line, you know, because if you have a dominant defensive line, they can stop the run, they can get after the quarterback, and it just, it makes your team so much better. And I think that there's a strong argument that can be made, although I'm sure the Jets fans will have a big disagreement, but I think a strong argument could be made. Bills have the best defensive line in the NFL. Now, they'll be without Marcell Dareus for the opener, but I really think they've got a great argument for being the best D-line in the NFL. Mario Williams, Jerry Hughes, Marcell Dareus, Kyle Williams, and now you've got Rex Ryan doing some different things with them. Everything starts there. They have a very good corner as well in Stephon Gilmore. And I think the combination of having what Rex Ryan always wants, which is a shutdown corner, along with that defensive line, gives them a chance to have an absolutely dominant defense yet again.
Well, you mentioned quarterback, and that's probably the one spot where the Bills severely lack an all-star player. What do you see? How do you see the quarterback position shaking out in camp this year?
Eerily similar to what's going on with the New York Jets, actually, because you know they both have a quarterback going into his third year that has not impressed thus far. Certainly not taking command of the starting quarterback job. And I think that they both franchises would love if that guy would do it. But I think most of us that look at it think that there's probably a better chance that the veteran backup ends up being the starter. So in Buffalo, that's Matt Cassel. In New York with the Jets, that's Ryan Fitzpatrick. I don't know when it'll happen, but I think it'll end up being Matt Cassel. And you know why?
Because he's a Patriot?
Well, maybe part of that, maybe part of what he learned when he was up in New England. But really, they both have defensive head coaches. And I've been around some defensive head coaches, and honestly, guys, they just think, you know what, my defense is going to be awesome. We're going to be awesome. We just need to make sure the quarterback doesn't screw it up. We just can't have that guy turn the football over. And so I think, you know, Rex Ryan looks at Matt Cassel and thinks he's got a much better chance to be conservative with the football, to not turn it over, and to give them a chance to win. I think there's some concerns from Rex Ryan that EJ Manuel could turn the football over. So they're going to give these young quarterbacks in both instances every opportunity. I still think, though, at some point, and it'll be, what's curious to me is when that point will be, it'll be the veteran's job.
Andrew, he mentioned the similarities at quarterback with the New York Jets. You have a question for Ross.
Yeah, so Chan Gailey came out this week and mentioned that there will be no competition at quarterback and that Geno Smith will start week one. And I'm actually happy that Geno Smith's going to be starting week one. I think that there's more upside to that play than there's Ryan Fitzpatrick. You know what you're going to get with Fitzpatrick. But critics of the move are saying that how can you say this and not have a competition? It it creates a culture within your franchise of not having competitions at certain positions. I was just wondering, you as a former player, when you see a position battle in camp going to either the wrong player or not even having a competition, how does that manifest itself throughout the rest of the roster? Do players take notice? And do they go to the coaches, talk to them about it? Like, how can you talk about like what we might see with the rest of the Jets roster looking at this quarterback battle actually not even taking place?
Well, I think most of the time players are able to sort of compartmentalize and just worry about themselves. And if they do look at something bigger than that, I think they recognize that the quarterback position is going to be a little bit different. Now, the problem, though, is I think people probably recognize then that maybe there's going to be a short leash for Geno, or maybe some of the guys don't have the respect for Geno or won't have the respect for Geno that they would have if he had actually gone out and earned the job. You know, I think a lot of them probably look at it and say, what did he do last year to just be handed this thing? Why isn't this a competition? And let's be honest, if the New York Jets' goal is to win as many games as possible in 2015, then why is there not a competition? That doesn't make any sense to me. Now, I don't think that's their only goal. I think their goal is also to come out of 2015 and know whether or not they have a franchise quarterback in Geno Smith. So I think they've decided that they're going to give him every single opportunity to show what he can do. They want to give him all the reps in the spring and in training camp. They want to have him start the season. You know, it's much better for their franchise if he's the guy. If he's not, or if Fitzpatrick gets the job, then they're going to have to ultimately draft another one probably next year. So I totally understand the mindset of, hey, we got to find out what we have in Geno. We got to give this kid every chance to show what he can do. And I'd probably go the same route if I were them, but I think it's then difficult to argue that you're solely focused on winning as many games as possible in 2015, because if he's not the better man for the job and you give him a 3 or 4 game leash, you know, to show whether or not he's the guy, well, then by that point, by the point he, you know, you bet you to move on to Fitzpatrick, it might be too late and you might have missed the playoffs, because I think they're going to be right in that, you know, 9-7, 10-6 area.
I think I definitely believe the Patriots are going to take that step back this year. I don't know if they're going to step too far back, but the one team I think, and that's why we have an hour-long podcast today, that will be the next one to step up in the East is probably the Dolphins. Dave, how do you see the Dolphins in comparison to the Bills? And then, Ross, I want you to sort of react to what Dave says.
Well, the one thing that concerns me about the Bills, of course, is the defense. Of course, being a Dolphins fan, I think I agree that the Dolphins would be the next ones up. But it's the defense of the Bills and as well as the Jets that are the biggest concerns. Both have questions at quarterback. So that will probably hold them back. I'm wondering if Ross thinks that that the time is up for EJ Manuel.
No, I don't think it is. I don't really understand. I mean, last year, what did he get, like 2 games to start? His rookie year, I thought he did some positive things, and he was in and out of the lineup with injuries. It seems to me like Geno Smith's getting a much longer rope and much more of an opportunity in New York than EJ Manuel is in Buffalo. And the one thing that's interesting is I tend to agree that I think the general feeling is that the Jets should be better, the Dolphins should be better, the Bills should be better. But the reality, I mean, they're all in the same division. So they're not all taking a step forward. I mean, Bills were 9-7 last year. Step forward is 10-6. Dolphins were 8-8. Step forward for them. I mean, somebody is going to really disappoint out of those three, and the reality, and probably only one of them will actually emerge as really being better than they were a year ago. Or maybe even if they are better, maybe it doesn't show in their record. You know, I mean, they might be better, but they might not win more games because they're playing better competition. You know, you can't sit here and say, oh, well, the Jets, the Dolphins, the Bills, they're all better. Well, they're all in the same division. They're not all going to win double-digit games. I can promise you that much.
Well, the truth is they are facing the AFC South and the NFC East are the two divisions that are on their schedule this year. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that three teams from this division actually make the playoffs. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's not something that is so crazy that it's definitely not going to happen. And going
it's
back,
it's possible, but when the last time even two made it?
Oh, from the AFC East?
That's a big leap to go from being a long time since even two made the playoffs out of this division to all of a sudden three make it, especially when you look at some of the teams that still reside in the AFC North and the AFC West.
Right. I believe the last time was 2010 when the Jets faced the Patriots in the playoffs. I don't remember exactly what happened in that game. Do you, Pod?
No, I don't. So, you know, I know I was down on the NFC East a little bit last week, but, you know, upon further review, I don't think the NFC East is necessarily a cakewalk this year. I mean, I know you got the crazy scientist in Philadelphia. New York is New York, and Dallas seems to be everybody's darling this year. I mean, pretty much the only other team in the East that people are thinking that they can walk right over is the Redskins. And Ross, you played for the Redskins as well. I mean, I don't know. They've got new pieces in place in Washington.
Well, they're not. They do. I mean, I don't think they're going to be very good, but they're not bad enough that they're a walkover. The one team I think that suffered a serious blow, you know, this week is the Giants with losing Will Beatty. I mean, he's a top five player in terms of value on that team. So that actually gives all the AFC East teams we're talking about a better chance, especially if they play them early. Now that Beatty's out, that means first-round pick Eric Flowers is probably going to play left tackle. I think he's going to struggle in pass protection there. So the AFC East all might have gotten a boost a little bit this week with the injury to Will Beatty and what that means, you know, for the Giants' offensive line, especially when it looks like they're going to want to throw the ball a lot.
And the Giants are actually looking at a former Miami Dolphin offensive tackle, Jake Long, to help fill that position, but he hasn't been healthy in like 2-3 years. So I don't see how, if that's going to help them much either.
We'll see. I mean, that's, you know, it's worth kicking the tires, right? I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they kick the tires on a guy like Anthony Collins as well. I think at this point, they're just looking for options, especially if it makes sense financially.
Ross, I know you got to go, but I do want to, since we brought up Jake Long, you played a similar position. You have sort of a similar career in terms of injuries. I wonder if you could shed some light as, I mean, the only difference is Jake Long was a first round draft choice and made a lot more money than you did. But I mean, you're both very similar players, and frankly, you know, according to my Madden game, you ended up better than Jake Long anyway, because you had a longer career in Madden than Jake Long did. So at least you got that going.
Well, that's what matters. That's what matters. Madden is what matters. You know, he was not only a first round pick, guys. He was a number one overall pick. He made a lot more money than me, and frankly, played a tougher position at left tackle, and he started more games. He's a better player than I was. But what I can tell you in terms of some insight is, you know, you can come back from these injuries, and I was able to come back from a major back surgery, but I wasn't quite the same player. And so, you know, I wasn't really that great to begin with. So if you're average to begin with, and then you're not quite the same when you come back, that's a problem. For a guy like Jake Long, who was good, I'd say not great. I thought he was good. To suffer these injuries, he's never going to be that player again.
All right. Well, you can listen to Ross. How many shows are you doing a week right now, Ross, on your podcast?
3 shows a week. And then I'm also doing the Fantasy Feast Eaton podcast once a week all year round as well. Although once the fantasy season kicks in, that'll be twice a week. So I'll be happy to get in any of your leagues, Jay, and kick your butt fantasy as well if you'd like me to.
I know that that's not going to be possible because you couldn't beat me in fantasy football, even if you tried. And I know you wouldn't try if we were in a league. So good luck. good luck on that. You can also follow Ross on Twitter at Ross Tucker NFL. Ross, it's been a pleasure reuniting here on the Next Fan Up podcast. Hopefully we can do it again.
Yeah, congrats on this podcast and the launch of everything you guys are doing. I'll be happy to come on anytime.
Thanks, Ross.
Awesome. All right, so that was Ross Tucker talking about the Buffalo Bills. We just sort of gleamed the surface there. You know, 15 minutes goes by quickly, guys. You can't really get in a lot. You can't really dig in for 15 minutes. So that's why we need a super fan to keep us on track. You know, send in those applications, nextfanup@gmail.com. Dolphin Dave, let's move down to Miami and talk about your team. And I do think that most people would say the Dolphins are number two, but it sounds like, as we were talking to Ross, that while you're the fan of the team and you believe that they're the number two team in the division, you have some question marks.
Yeah, well, I've also heard that people are high on the Bills too. So with their dominant defense, it's just the question at quarterback for them, of course. The big news for us, of course, is our quarterback, the signing of Ryan Tannehill to a long-term extension, which has been in the works, and something I think they needed to do. It was a fairly obvious move to make, and I think the right move to make at this point.
Well, and talking about the quarterback position, we're going to take my team sort of out of the conversation in terms of the quarterback position right now. But if you look at the Bills and you look at the Jets and their quarterback depth chart, I mean, you have three guys in Ryan Tannehill, Matt Moore, and Josh Freeman who all have had some degrees of success in the NFL. I think you might have perhaps the deepest quarterback depth chart in this division.
Yeah, I would agree. Although I'm not sure that Josh Freeman will stick. If you remember, we had Brady Quinn in camp last year and he didn't make the cut. So, I was a little surprised because Matt Moore did become a free agent this past offseason. So I was concerned that he might end up with the Jets or Bill. But, yeah, that didn't happen, and couldn't be more happy about that.
Where are you most concerned with your team?
Our defense, our linebacker core is pretty unsettled. We lost a lot of guys there. We lost, Philip Wheeler. We lost Danelle Ellerby. We lost some depth with Jason Trusnik. And then we didn't draft anyone at linebacker. But what we did do was we signed a bunch of rookie free agents. Mike Hall, who was the Big Ten linebacker of the year for Penn State. And we got Utah State's Zach Vigil, who was the Mountain West Defensive Player of the Year. So I would expect there was a couple other guys, Jeff Luke and Neville Hewitt, who the team's really high on as well. But right now we've got Jelani Jenkins, Koa Misi, and Chris McCain kind of penciled in as those starting three. And we made a couple free agent signings, but I would expect maybe two of those rookie free agents to make it to the roster. And for us, that's a little scary.
Well, if you're going to have one, if you're going to have a weak spot on your defense, the spot where you'd like to have it would be on the line, would be the linebacker core, the second level of their defense, as opposed to the defensive line or the secondary. But I look at your roster and I see an even bigger problem, and that is the offensive line. I know Brandon Albert had a great year last year until he tore his ACL. So now he's coming off ACL surgery. You have Juwan James, who was a first round pick last year, who showed flashes, but like he was very inconsistent, but you would expect that out of a rookie. And Mike Pouncey's a stud, but if he could get his head on straight, but like that's a different story. But then you look at your guards, and you're right now your starting guards are Dallas Thomas and Billy Turner. And against in a division like the AFC East, where you're facing the fronts of the Jets and the Bills and the Patriots, it's going to be very difficult for Lamar Miller to find any run to find any holes in those defenses. So what do you guys expect to do there with the interior offensive line? Make any moves? Hopefully some young guys step up.
Well, the team is very high on Billy Turner. Unfortunately, as fans, we barely got to see him. He played a couple games towards the end of the season last year, but he was making the switch from left tackle to right guard. The Dolphins did select Jameel Douglas in the fourth round. So he's going to be working at right guard as well.
And then you also, I mean, I'm just like going off on your team right now because like, I just don't want to talk about mine yet, but you have, at
oh,
one corner
we're getting there.
I mean,
yeah,
at one
no,
corner
no, but you're right. I mean, those are concerns. We've got two unproven guys, at guard. So
right.
that's also a big concern.
My team isn't well set at that position either, but I'm looking at your secondary right now. You guys are well set at safety with Rashad Jones, who I believe is one of the most underrated players in the league, and Louis Delmas, if he could stay healthy. And at one corner slot, right, you have Brent Grimes, who's a legit number one cornerback. But on the other side, you have a bunch of guys you drafted last year, Will Davis being one of them, and Jamar Taylor competing at the other slot. And as we saw of what the Jets did this year, this offseason, the secondary has become the most it's hard to say the most important, because you could say the defensive line, but I'd say it's the easiest thing for another team to exploit, for to go after a certain guy, a cornerback. So how nervous are you about your situation in the secondary coming into the season?
I have to admit, I'm pretty nervous. We also have Jamar Taylor, who I think probably gets the start opposite Brent Grimes. His problem is just staying healthy. When he's been on the field, he's played well, but the guy just cannot stay healthy. I heard something strange about him. He has some sort of condition where he cannot receive pain medications. And I think it's like a kidney condition or something. Huh. So that kind of slows him down at times.
Oh. That's not good.
Yeah, that would. Yeah. Yeah, as a football player, it's going to be difficult to play without having some sort of pain medication. It would be. I think Ross would be able to talk about that, about how easy it is, especially in an NFL locker room, just to get some sort of shot to take care of the pain, just to make it go away.
Yeah, I'm not sure how true that is. I heard it on another podcast, a Dolphins podcast. I haven't heard it. I've never actually heard it reported anywhere else. We did spend quite a few draft picks on the secondary. They drafted Bobby McCain in the fifth round, cornerback, as well as Cedric Thompson, a safety in the fifth round. And also there's a two-way player from Michigan State, Tony Liffitt, also a fifth rounder. Dolphins had four fifth rounders this year. He started at both cornerback and wide receiver at Michigan State this past year.
It seems like you're going to play him at corner. And just to update on the Jamar Taylor situation, last year he needed surgery on a sports hernia, and they couldn't give him anti-inflammatory medication because, as you said, his body wouldn't allow him to take it. So it was just another added hurdle for him to jump through, jump over. Right. You don't jump through hurdles, you jump over hurdles. But yeah, you guys get the point.
Well, speaking of jumping hurdles, Andrew, you've jumped over enough. So let's start talking about the New York Jets here. And you mentioned it with Ross. I mean, if we're going to start attacking the Jets, we're going to start right at the quarterback position. And Geno Smith was named your starter. And I can only guess that you're not feeling – well, you said you liked it, but I can't believe that you feel comfortable with it.
Well, I liked it because, like, what other choice do I have? You know, like, the other choice it reminds me of that classic South Park episode where Stan wouldn't vote because he had to vote between a giant. I don't know this how family friendly this podcast is, but he had two very bad choices to pick from, so he just decided not to pick any of them. Unfortunately, the Jets don't have that option. They have to choose between Geno Smith and Ryan Fitzpatrick. They also took Bryce Petty in the fourth round, but ideally he won't see the field till at least next year, because coming out of a spread offense in Baylor, he has to learn how to play in the NFL. But getting back to Geno, watching Geno, it's very, very frustrating. I'm sure as Dave, I don't know if you remember last year, week 17, Geno Smith, perfect quarterback rating, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. Like, he has games where he looks like a viable starting quarterback, but he has games where he'll throw 4 interceptions and try to put the ball behind his back and fumble. But as the truth is, how many games can you expect to win with Ryan Fitzpatrick starting all your games this year? To me, I'd set the over-under like at 7.5. And like, you probably go 8-8, but like, what's that getting you? I'd rather start Geno Smith and see if he could break out and play well. And if he doesn't play well, you could have a bad year, get a good draft pick, because this is a new regime. So they have job security. At least you'd think they'd have job security. So if they do go 4-12, 5-11 this year because Geno doesn't play well, you'll have the draft pick to go and take a guy like Connor Cook or Cardale Jones next year. So the starting Geno isn't the issue. The issue to me is coming out this early and saying it, because not having a competition, it sort of raises eyebrows a bit. I mean, as Ross said before, like the players might look around, might look funny at that decision to be made so quickly, but Fitzpatrick's coming off a broken leg. He's not even healthy yet. And I'm just arguing the other side of this now. I'm just talking out of both sides of my mouth as a Jets fan. But these Geno, you want to try to get him as many reps as possible with the first team offense. And doing that could only help him. So I'm not saying I would have made this decision right now, but it's really not the end of the world that they named him the starting quarterback. And hopefully it works out. Hopefully these reps get thrown to the first team offense this early just losing my train of thought. That these reps will help them coming into the season.
I agree with you on your opinion. It's better to go 8-8 with Geno as your starter than with Ryan Fitzpatrick, an age old veteran that really doesn't have much more of a ceiling to reach. He's at his ceiling. Geno may or may not have reached his ceiling yet. So I agree with you on that front. Where I think your team, while it does have a new regime and you would think that they'd have a little bit of leeway, where I believe that they don't is that they have at least surrounded Geno with some good weapons. You know, I think you have a fairly deep wide receiving core, and I also have to say you may have the deepest running back core of anyone in this division.
Well, yeah, you mentioned the running backs. The Jets running back situation is a very funny. You look at the depth chart because they have four guys who are likely to make the roster, and Chris Ivory, Stephen Ridley, Zach Stacy, and Bilal Powell. The problem is only one of those guys can play third downs, and that's Bilal Powell. And Bilal Powell isn't the most explosive guy in the world. He's a good pass protector. He's a good pass catcher. But the other three guys, Ivory, Ridley, and Stacy, are all of the between the tackles, run you over type of guys. And what I think the Jets are doing there is because they feel like with those style of running backs that there's a lot of propensity for injury there, especially a guy like Chris Ivory, who just doesn't care. If he sees you, he's going to run you over, and that leads to injuries, and that's how his career has gone so far. But it was very odd to me to see them not take a running back in the draft who could come out of the backfield and catch the ball, like one of those little scat back types that you see every so often. But hopefully they could find somebody through undrafted free agency or after training camp ends when people have to make cuts, to find a guy like that. You mentioned the wide receiver core. And yes, I agree with you. The receiving core is as good as I can remember, even better than the 2010 years with Braylon Edwards, Antonio Holmes, and Cotchery. Right now they have Brandon Marshall, Eric Decker, and Jeremy Curley as the top three guys. Going into the draft, in our superfan mock draft, I traded up to take Breshad Perriman at 29 because I said the top three guys, the one thing they lack is that they can't go deep. Not that they can't go deep, it's not the biggest part of their game. Well, it seemed like Mike Maccagnan thought the same thing because in the second round, they took who I think is the best deep receiver in the draft in Devin Smith. And the knock on Devin Smith coming out was that all he could do is go deep. And even if that's true, which it doesn't seem like it is, it seems like they only let him go deep in college because he was just so good at it. Like Mel Kiper said he was the best guy in the draft at tracking the deep balls, the best guy he's seen in a long time. And if he's going to be your fourth receiver, that's all you really need to ask him to do this year. And then at practice, you could have him do other things. So overall, I really like what the Jets have done to surround Geno. And now it's up to Geno to make use of it and hopefully lead us to the playoffs this year.
You know, the other thing is a quarterback's best friend is a great defense. And as much as I hate to admit it, I mean, your defense is solid. I mean, there's not very many holes you can find in that defense.
Oh, I'll disagree with you on that a bit. Obviously our front is ridiculous. Like with Wilkerson, Harrison, Richardson, and Leonard Williams, what we don't really have is an outside pass rusher, but we never really had an outside pass rusher, even with Rex Ryan. I mean, we have Quentin Coples, but he's sort of playing out of position at linebacker. We took Lorenzo Malden in the third round from Louisville, but he's more of an all-around type guy. He's sort of like a young Calvin Pace, who somehow is still on this roster. But we have that, and I'm a little nervous about like how we're going to cover tight ends. Like that's always been an issue with the Jets, even with Rex Ryan. Like our inside linebackers right now are David Harris and DeMario Davis, two very good run stopping linebackers, but they're not the greatest coverage guys in the world. And we did pick up Marcus Gilchrist to play safety, but looking at the advanced numbers and watching some tape on him, it doesn't seem like he's very inconsistent. Hopefully he could pick that up, but in a division with the best tight end in NFL history. I mean, it pains me to say that, but like the way Gronk is playing right now and the trajectory that he's on, it's not the craziest thing to say that he will wind up as being the best ever. It's going to be difficult for us to cover him. What we're planning on doing is just getting to Brady before that happens.
Right. I mean, because that's obviously the key to the Patriots offense is Brady to Gronk, but you're not going to have to worry about Brady for game number one, most likely. Let's talk about the Patriots since we're talking about them. And we've talked incessantly about Deflategate. Everyone knows how I feel about that. If you don't, go back and listen to our two previous shows. You can do that at blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup.
You can subscribe on iTunes, by the way. You can hear us on iTunes. So feel free to go back and listen to those previous shows. Right now, I'm going into the season assuming Brady is suspended for 4 games. Most likely his appeal, he'll get it cut down, although I'm not 100% sold on that.
I think it'll be cut down.
But let's just, for argument's sake, at this point, the information that we have in front of us is Tom Brady is suspended for 4 games. And that brings us the young Jimmy Garoppolo, who the Patriots drafted last year in the assumption that he was the quarterback of the future. But most likely he's just another one of those young quarterbacks the Patriots were looking to develop to get a second or third round draft choice from somebody, like they done with Matt Castle and Brian Hoyer before Garoppolo. Patrick had brought up a ranking for the quarterbacks in the AFC East, and I actually put Garoppolo as third behind Brady and Tannehill. I'm curious what you guys think about that, and specifically you, Andrew, since all your quarterbacks would be below him.
Well, what I think's happening there, besides Patriots fan, is that we haven't really seen Garoppolo much. Like we've already seen what Geno Smith can do. We've already seen what EJ Manuel can do, Ryan Fitzpatrick. So it's more of the allure of the unknown with Garoppolo than anything else. So that's why I could see him being the third guy. But if he struggles the first 2 games, like, it won't shock me to see Patrick put him down last. So, like, that's just the way fans are. So like, it's just a very arbitrary process of ranking these quarterbacks right now. But the bottom line is that Tannehill's first, and I don't think that's a question at all.
No, I don't think so. Dolphin Dave, how do you see the rest of the quarterbacks in the division?
Well, I had actually thought, I have to admit, I don't think I've ever seen Garoppolo play, so it's hard for me to rank him. But I thought perhaps Matt Moore would be third on that list. I have to say, I've been a Matt Moore fan ever since we got him. He was the MVP of the team that the year he started. And people think he failed out at Carolina, but he was more, I think, more of a victim of a regime change there. He did really well. He battled some injuries, but he did really well when he played there. But then a new regime came in, and I think that's when they drafted Jimmy Clausen.
You know, the Patriots' offensive line was definitely a problem last year until that famous Chiefs game where everyone thought Brady was done and the Patriots made some moves and Brian Stork was finally healthy enough to play the center position. They drafted a couple of guys in the mid-rounds of the draft, and right now they're not scheduled to be starters, although I wouldn't be surprised to see somebody else besides Klein at the left guard position, and certainly not the Devy kid. Although he's big, he's just not mean and nasty. And that's something that the Patriots offensive line was lacking last year, was that big, nasty guy. Stork sort of took that a little bit, but certainly not as much as their former left guard who ended up in Tampa Bay. Was, and that's for sure. I'm not a big fan of what the Patriots got going on the offensive line. I'm still a little down on the wide receiver position. I mean, Julian Edelman, I think finally proved, I would hope proved, that he's a lot better than what people give him credit for. I think he's got a little, Wes Welker in him. You know, Wes Welker was similar and a guy who sort of reinvented the slot receiver position and didn't get enough credit for being an actual wide receiver. I think Julian Edelman is similar in that stance, and he's taller than Wes Welker was.
Right. I'd like to see what he would do without Brady. And we're going to see that the first couple of games with Garoppolo, because Brady, as we see, is the best short yardage passer that I've seen. I mean, in my lifetime, like he's literally like never off on that. And that's where Edelman does most of his damage. And you were mentioning the offensive line. The problem with the thing that I see that's a big issue with the offensive line is that the other three teams in your division, in our division, the strength of their team is on the defensive line. So,
right.
So like the other three teams have built their teams to go after Brady, and it doesn't seem like the Patriots are well equipped to handle it. So that's why I could see what Ross said earlier in the podcast, that you could see the Patriots taking a step back because the weakness of their team lines up with the strengths of the other three teams in the division.
Well, the only place where I'll disagree with you on that is Brady's so good at getting the ball out quick. You've got a guy in Edelman. You got a guy in Amendola. You obviously have Rob Gronkowski. I mean, guys that aren't necessarily going to be burners down the field but can get open fairly quick in that short area. And then you add in, Scott Chandler, who is also a pretty decent tight end. I mean, obviously not Rob Gronkowski, but he was good enough. And Tim Wright had a great season last year. All he did was catch touchdowns. And you've got the Patriot fans' favorite guy in Huamanawui. So, I mean... I love their tight end core. Well, I just call him Who-Man. the thing is they're most likely not going to keep all four of them. Honestly, I think Tim Wright is going to be the odd man out in that group because I think Who-Man does a lot more in terms of blocking than any of the other three we mentioned. Gronk is a pretty decent blocker, but I mean, Gronk isn't going anywhere. The running back core is one that I know a lot of people point to as being, oh, the Patriots didn't do anything to improve their running backs. But honestly, I think Jonas Gray proved that he's a pretty decent running back. He just ended up in the doghouse, and we still don't know what James White is all about. I think he's going to end up surprising a lot of people. And LeGarrette, for whatever reason, only plays for Bill Belichick.
Right. The thing that's weird about your running back situation is that it doesn't seem like you really replace Shane Vereen as the third down guy. I mean, looking at the depth chart right now, you have Travaris Cadet, the guy that came from New Orleans, but he's not like the greatest receiver out of the backfield either. So, and that's a weapon that Brady has always had with the Kevin Falk and Shane Vereen. So I'm wondering how you guys are going to replace that guy. It's sort of the same situation the Jets have, in that they don't have that guy that come out of the backfield and catch the ball. I mean, they have Bilal Powell, but as I said, like, I run just fast as Bilal Powell runs.
The thought is that James White is a decent enough pass catcher, but I don't know if he's a Shane Vereen or Kevin Falk type running back. He's certainly built a little differently than those two. So I agree. That's definitely a position that I'd be concerned about. The other major position, and Patrick has said this numerous times in our conversations, is clearly the Patriots secondary. Mm-hmm. That secondary could quite possibly be one of the worst I've seen ever in the history of football. It's bad. Interesting. I'm looking at ESPN's projected depth chart for the Patriots. They've got Brandon Fletcher and Super Bowl hero Malcolm Butler listed as the starters. And that's just not good. I mean, that's downright. Not very good. That's just horrible.
Right. And if you talk to Mark,
diddly poo.
Yeah, I suspect that's going to be the case for most of the year. I mean, this is not what we come to expect winners in New England.
I want people that want to win.
Did they draft anyone?
They did not. They did not draft a corner. They did draft a strong safety in Jordan Richards, who, you know, every description of him, he sounds like the perfect Patriot. He was the captain of the team. He was nicknamed Coach because he knew exactly what everybody's position was and what their assignments were. So he sounds like the Patriot. I don't know if he's going to start.
Devin McCourty is clearly there. The rumors of moving McCourty to cornerback, I think those rumors become even stronger. I think we could see McCourty end up playing a little corner, and I know Patrick's not happy about that.
I wouldn't be happy. First, let's talk about Richards, because that was a very surprising pick, because he was like a fifth, sixth round draft prospect, and he got taken in the second round, sort of the way the Patriots took Tavon Wilson a couple of years ago, where everyone was shocked, and that hasn't worked out well either. It just seems like Belichick likes to show that he's smarter than everybody else and takes these guys earlier than some would have them pegged. But and also talking about McCourty, I agree with Patrick that I think it's a very bad move if you're going to move McCourty to corner. There's a reason that you move him to safety in the first place. It's because he's better there. So you're getting weaker at two spots by doing that. And also another issue that I'd see is that you have Patrick Chung playing as your starting safety right now. Patrick Chung is a good player if you have other corners around him so that you could leave, so you could have Chung playing in the box. But you guys don't have those corners now. And I feel like you're going to see a lot of balls flying over Patrick Chung's head this year if you guys have him playing the same role you had him playing last year.
Yeah. I mean, the secondary is definitely a concern in this defense. Where I'm not concerned is I believe they did a great job of re-solidifying the defensive line, even losing Vince Wilfork, which will be a big loss for sure. I think they did a great job of replacing him by keeping Alan Branch, who certainly showed signs of being able to suck up to defenders, which is what you want that role to be. They ended up getting Malcolm Brown, who falls all the way to the last pick in the first round, which was a bit of a surprise. And he certainly will fill the Vince Wilfork role to a T. We'll see what Dominic Easley can do, their first round draft pick last year, who missed a lot of last year with an injury. Hopefully he can stay healthy. Rob Ninkovich, I mean, the man is a Mike Vrabel clone. And they're playing him on the D line instead of at linebacker, which is where he belongs. He can't cover. He certainly is not a cover guy, but he's that lunch pail guy that just knows how to get things done. And of course, Chandler Jones, who also has a little bit of a injury bug that he's sort of got to get over. But they end up picking up Jabal Sheard, which I think is fantastic. You know, Dante Hightower may or may not be ready to play during the season, depending on who you believe. I'm personally of the belief that we're going to go into the season with Hightower on the PUP, so we're not going to see him until about week 8 or so. Jerod Mayo, now he's got injury questions, but they pick up Brandon Spikes this week, which I think is definitely something they needed to do desperately for that linebacking core. And of course, Jamie Collins, I think, is probably one of the I think he's definitely underrated. I'm not going to go out and say he's the most underrated linebacker in the league, but he's right up there. He's pretty good.
He's a very good player. Another guy I really like on your team, who you guys took in the fourth round this year, was Trey Flowers. I think he's gonna make an impact at some point this year. He's graded very well in the advanced stats with Pro Football Focus going through every play. And it was very odd to see him fall to the fourth round, and just of course the Patriots had to pick him up. So I think he'll make an impact too. But go on.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a strength on this team, it's certainly that front seven. I think they've got a great rotation, especially on that D line, set up with Trey Flowers, Geno Grissom, another draft pick as well. I mean, they can rotate in guys on that front line fairly easily. The problem is going to be it doesn't matter how many guys you can rotate on the front line. If you can't cover in the back end, it doesn't matter how many guys you got up at the front.
It's funny because you started that thought, if there's a strength on the team, because I'm looking at this roster, and without Brady, I think it's clear that you guys have the fourth best roster on the team in the division. I really don't think it's an argument. Because the secondary is so so weak. It reminds me of the Jets secondary was like coming into last year, where we were counting on guys who should have been like the fourth or fifth corners to be like the first or second. And that we saw what happened there with the Jets season last year. And please, God, please, like I just to see you guys, the Patriots fans, suffer through a secondary like that the way I had to last year, it would make me really, really happy.
Well, I mean, there's a good chance. I mean, like I said, the information we have now, Tom Brady's out for four games. I think there's a very good chance the Patriots could go 0-4 during that span. I don't think they will, but no. there's definitely a chance they could start the season 0-4 without Tom Brady. All right, guys, I think we're at that point where we need to sort of go give our predictions for what we think this division is going to, how this division is going to wrap up. And we'll start with you, Dolphin Dave. What record do you expect your team to have? And what will be considered a good season for Miami?
I think we have to get at least 10 wins to say we had a good season. That kind of puts you right on the fringe of getting into the playoffs. What do I expect? Looking at the schedule, I'd probably say 9. I think I could probably make an argument for 9-10 wins. But yeah, I think we do improve to 9 or 10 wins this year.
Does that save Joe Philbin's job?
You know, I don't. It's, everybody seems to have a problem with Joe Philbin, but I don't. I don't know why. I mean, he's kind of a boring guy to listen to.
Yeah, lack of charisma.
But you know, when you talk to the players, they have nothing but good things to say about him. You know, you talk to some of the free agents coming in, and you know, they say part of the reason they came in is because of the coaches.
I just want to finish off with this Joe Philbin thing, because the way the Dolphins front office is structured right now, it's a very odd thing. They have a bunch of guys making decisions. When they introduced Ndamukong Suh after they signed him, Joe Philbin wasn't even on the dais. Like they had their GM, Dennis Hickey, there. They had their owner, Stephen Ross. They had Mike Tannenbaum with decisions. Joe Philbin was sitting with the reporters. So it seems like he's on thin ice there. And if they don't make the playoffs this year, I find it very hard to believe that he'll be back next year.
Yeah, I don't read into that too much. When they extended Ryan Tannehill, it was him, Hickey, and Tannehill at the press conference. So,
right. Okay.
You know, you can only have so many guys at the table.
bigger table.
As I'm looking over the schedule, I just did my quick win-loss for each game, and I don't like what I came up with, honestly. It's way too early to be doing these anyway. Yeah. I have them at 6-10. And what's interesting about looking at their schedule, I think your first 6 weeks, because you have a bye week 5, your first 5 games are all extremely easy. You're at Washington, you're at Jacksonville, you host Buffalo and New York. I mean, those games aren't easy, but if I'm going to split the series, because I think all these teams in the East are fairly equal, I'm going to give probably each team a split in each series, right? And I'll give you the home wins. So you're home Buffalo, home New York, and then you're at Tennessee. Your first game, of which I think you have real concern about, is maybe hosting Houston. But I mean, is that really that difficult? That game honestly could go either way. But I mean, do I see you going 6-0 to start the season? Probably not.
Never beat Houston.
And then this is where things get hairy. So starting with that Houston game. Yeah. Then you're on the road 3 straight weeks, New England, Buffalo, Philly. You host the Cowboys, like I said, everybody's darling. You're at New York. You host the Ravens. You host the Giants. You're at San Diego. You host Indy and you host New England. The end of your season is brutal, Miami. Andrew, what do you think the Jets are going to do, and what is going to be considered a good season for the Jets this year?
Well, it's a very odd thing because the Jets, it all depends on how Geno plays now, the quarterback position. So I could see them going anywhere from 5-11 to 11-5, depending on how the quarterback plays, because it seems like the rest of their roster is well set. So to me, like, if I had to make a prediction, I'll probably just split the difference and say 8-8, which of course would be the worst possible record, because then we get a bad pick and we don't make the playoffs. So it would be perfectly Jets for that to happen. But I'm going to think on the positive side. I think we're going to – Chan Gailey's offense is a very good fit for what Geno likes to do. So I'm going to say they're going to go 10-6. And I really think three teams from this division are going to make the playoffs. And I think that third team is going to be Buffalo. I really like what they did this offseason. And I just don't like what's going on in Miami relative to everyone else in the division comparatively. I just think there's a lot of competing agendas going on there, and I don't know if everything's going to work out as well as Dave thinks it's going to work out. So, I mean, the day's May 23rd, so no one really knows what's going to happen, and no one ever really knows, as Jim Moore used to like to say. So, if I'm going to make a prediction, though, I'm going to say the Jets are going to make the playoffs this year.
I thought I had that drop. Oh, I'm so disappointed.
I was waiting for it.
You think you know, but you don't know, and you never will. There.
How do I not have that? That is so disappointing. I mean, I do have
playoffs.
This one. How do I not have you think you know? I could have sworn I do. I've got diddly poo. I don't have you think you know. Something
I set you up really well there too, Pod.
You really did. You really did. You set me up perfect. Well, yeah. You know.
Hello, you play to win the game.
Apparently not me. I have, as I looked at the Jets schedule real quick, I have you at 9-7. You could easily go 10-6. A lot depends on how you feel about the Jets versus the Giants in the new Meadowlands. But the Jets are set up, I think, to make some noise here for sure.
Right. And I actually just noticed that the Jets basically have 9 home games this year because they're at the Giants. It counts as a Giants home game. So, and also they're at Miami in London. So they actually only have 6 road games. So there you go.
So while I look over the Bills schedule here real quick, guys, what are you thinking about the Bills? What do you think Bills fans are going to be happy with Rex Ryan? We'll start with you, Andrew, since Rex was your former coach.
Well, they'll be happy with the press conferences. I'll tell you that much. It's going to be entertaining. I think that they're really well set up everywhere on their roster other than quarterback and offensive line, which I would argue are the two most important spots on the team. But Rex has a history of being able to overcome those issues, and I think that he'll find a way to overcome them again this year. And just when a coach like Rex Ryan comes in, it's all rainbows and sunshine at the beginning of his tenure. And I think that's what's going to happen this year with Buffalo. Everyone's going to love playing for him. It's going to be a different vibe around the team than it was last year. And I think that's going to lead to a playoff spot for the first time in God knows how long in Buffalo.
Dave, what do you think about Buffalo?
Yeah, you know, Ross said that he saw the Patriots taking a step back, and everybody's saying all – the rest of us got better, but like he said, we can't all go 10-6. So somebody has to come up short in this division. And I have to agree with Andrew. I think maybe it's probably the Bills because of the questions that
at quarterback and offensive line. So, I mean, looking at the division, I'm thinking it's New England, Miami, New York, and Buffalo.
So as I looked at the schedule for the Bills, I've got them at 5-11.
Wow.
I mean, and they'd be at the bottom. They'd obviously be below your 6-10 Dolphins. Again, it's May 23rd. I don't feel very confident about these picks. But, right. You know, the Bills schedule is not one that's very easy. I mean, they host their first two toughest opponents in Indy and New England, and it's still assumed Garoppolo would probably be the starter for New England. And like I said, I've split the series with every team here in the division. I believe each team is going to get a win and each team is going to get a loss against everybody else in the division. So, I mean, I chalk that up as a win for Buffalo. But then after that, I mean, they have Cincinnati. They have to go to Kansas City. And of course, as we mentioned, the NFC East and the AFC South teams. I just, you know, I'm not believing in Buffalo. Also, I think you may find this surprising. I'm not high on New England. I think I've made it clear that I'm not that high on New England. I have them tied with the Jets at 9-7. I don't like the Patriots schedule at all. And a lot of that has to do with however long Brady is out in those first four games. So the Patriots first four, they host the Steelers. I think that's an L. I think at Buffalo with Jimmy Garoppolo, that's an either or game. But since I split the division, that's an L. They host Jacksonville and Jimmy Garoppolo is thanking him a layup at some point. They go on their bye week. And then they're at Dallas. Again, if that's Jimmy Garoppolo, I'm not feeling all that confident going into Dallas. Brady comes back in week six at Indianapolis with the biggest chip on his shoulder. If you're playing fantasy football, that's the week you want to start Tom Brady because he's going to put up some points. But then, you know, they're scheduled as the champion of this division and the Super Bowl champion does not get any easier. They're at Denver. They do get to host Philadelphia, but I don't think that's a pushover game anymore. And then, of course, they're splitting the division. 9-7 for the Patriots, I think, you know. I don't think Patriot fans are going to be happy with a 9-7 season. At the same time, we just won the Super Bowl. Tom Brady's been suspended for four games. Coming out 9-7 tied for the division championship, the end of the world for New England fans, at least not for this one.
Yeah, this has got to be one of the most unpredictable divisions in the league right now.
I can see the competition in this division ending up being very similar to what the NFC South was last year. Now, I don't think all four teams are going to end up with losing records. but I mean, you've got the co-champions at 9-7 and the Dolphins and the Bills 6-10, 5-11. I mean, this division's up for grabs, guys. I do think the Patriots take enough of a step back to make this a competition this year for sure.
Yeah, first time in years, you could come into a season and not just generally say, yeah, the Patriots are winning the division. Everyone else is fighting for second place.
And so, on that note, send us your applications to nextfanup@gmail.com. Thanks so very much to Ross Tucker. You can listen to his podcast, the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Go download it on iTunes. Find it on the internet. You can tweet at him at Ross Tucker NFL. He filled in for the Bills. And we know Bills Mafia, you're out there, and I'm sure you're not thrilled with me giving you a 5-11 record. So come on board and tell me how much of an idiot I am in person. You can tweet at us at NFU Podcast and reach us on Facebook, facebook.com/NFU. Podcast. Dolphin Dave, Andrew, thanks for joining us today for this AFC preview. And on that note, there you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.